Major Tice Wheel Creek.
I'll just pop back and tell you about the stories of Siam. Mid 41, the Japanese, the British embassy in Bangkok complained to the Siamese government that there was a massive influx of Japanese into the country, a lot of them heading south. It was obvious that these were Japanese officers on intelligence duties. And so, to pacify the British, the Siamese said, well, if you want to send any British officers up into Siam, you can. Now, this has been written up in many books as a complete waste of time that these British officers were sent up, that the Japanese saw them coming, followed them. I happened to be one of the British officers that was sent up. I was summoned to Singapore, given a false passport, grew my hair a bit longer than it normally was, and that was always too long for my brigade major. Given a false passport, Siamese currency, and I went up as a journalist, an American journalist who was covering the Far East for, I forget the paper in America. And I was going up, my job was to go up the east coast of Siam to Singora and Patani and the ports there to see if there was any great Japanese activity. I was lucky in the fact that this part of Siam, the dialect, if you spoke Malay, you could make anyone understand. It was very much had been part of Malaya, and you could speak the language virtually. Patani, there wasn't much. But I got to Singora, and there was an awful lot of Japanese activity there. I stayed at the rest house. And I was told that there was the Singora airfield was being expanded in a very big way. So I got myself a bicycle and went out there. I had a little camera, and I was just about to, I could see fences going up, a lot of work on the airfield. And I was just about to try and take some photographs when the Siamese police, armed, came up and started yelling and shouting in their usual way, and took my camera away from me and smashed it, sent me on packing on my way. This rather put the wind up me because I thought, well, this is bound to get back to the Japanese. They will want to know, although I hadn't been followed up till then. So the next day I came back from Singora by road to Alostar. In fact, across the other side of Malaya. This was most interesting because if people say that we aren't, it wasn't any use, I reckon this was because it was obvious that the Japanese were going to use Singora Airfield as their main jumping off point for the Battle of Malaya, which is what they did. Don't forget, nothing to do with me, but on the other side there was an operation called Matador. Now, Matador roughly was, if war was inevitable with the Japanese, and before they had landed in Singora, Patani, and such ports, the division on the other side, 11 Div, would move up to Singora, hold Singora, and deny the airfield to the Japanese, which have made our task far easier and their task far harder, because one, it would have denied them the air base if we had the troops to do it, and two, it would have put our troops into a much better morale thing, because you were actually going forward instead of on the defensive. Matador never happened. It went backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and I think in the end Percival said, well, we can't do that because the Japanese haven't officially declared war. So the airfield at Singora and Patani, there was a grass airfield at Patani, they were never denied, and the Japanese merely landed there, and the whole of their fleet disgorged there, except for the three or four troop ships that came down to Kelantan. It merely shows you another mess up.
When you went into Siam to Singora, did you go by yourself?
I went by myself, yes. I was on my own.
How long were you there?
I suppose I spent about a week there altogether.
How valuable do you think the material was that you brought back?
Piggy Heath, who commanded Third Corps, was very interested in it. Billy Key was very interested in it. I don't think Singapore Command was interested at all. I don't even know, quite frankly, whom I went up under, whether it was SOE, because SOE were operating in the Far East, whether it was SOE or whether it was Malaya Command.
Did you have to report directly to Heath?
I came back to Heath, yes, and I reported to, and then I never went to Singapore. I reported to Piggy Heath at Third Court, Kuala Lumpur, but I never went back to Singapore.
Did Key go with you to Kuala Lumpur?
No, I went back to Key. Heath was commanding the Third Indian Corps, and I was interrogated by his intelligence officer. And then I went back and was interrogated by Billy Key and the staff and the COs up there.
Now, that was a bit of a diversion from the account you were giving of the Japanese landing.
Yes, I was.
You were just saying that you woke Billy Key up. Yeah. Can you take it from there, please?
Yeah, sure. The brigade headquarters in operations was at the Chinese girls' school in Kotobaru, and everything had been moved there. I mean, it had all been wired previously. The signals had laid their cables and everything, that it just moved in toto down to there. And the first day, first day, the it took a day for the Japanese to breach the defences on the beach.
Did you stay at the HQ or did you go down to the beaches?
I didn't go down to the beaches, in actual fact. My recollection of the first day was to go down to the Baluchis at Pasiapute and fill them in as to what was actually happening. Because the wireless sets were quite useless in the jungle.
Why?
Well, they were, one, they were so heavy you couldn't carry them. And the range was so short. Quite useless. I went down to tell the Blooches what was happening. And on the way back, I had my first baptism of fire. I used to do all my recces, or most of my recces, on a motorcycle. I love motorcycling, and I could ride jungle paths on a motorcycle far easier than I could walking them. And I was coming back on a long stretch. The road went through between two paddy fields for about 2 miles. I was driving along, lovely day. Suddenly I saw in front of me specks of dirt in the road. And I looked up over my shoulder and there was a bloody Japanese Zero having pot shots at me.
Who had you reported to?
I reported to CO down at Pasiapute.
What was the situation there?
Well, the situation there was nothing. You see, the Japanese hadn't landed there at all. They'd only landed in the other beaches. Pasiapute was, again, really a complete waste of time because it was defending an airfield that was hardly operational. I think Pasiapute was just about operational, but it hadn't got any main buildings or control towers or anything like that.
Did everybody seem confident or worried?
I think the first day, everyone was pretty confident. The Dogras killed an awful lot of chaps on that beach. In fact, in retrospect, later on the Japanese raised two monuments on that beach for the fallen. But then the airfield became untenable and the Air Force just left and it was all in flames. And
did you go to the airfield?
I did go to the airfield, yeah. I went up there and I went up there to find out what was happening at night. That's the 9th of the 8th. When I crawled up a ditch to try and go sort of round the airfield, and then I heard what I've always called the first chattering of monkeys. And the chattering of monkeys is the Japanese troop in action. He makes a hell of a bloody noise. Well, he did with me. And they chatter away in that rather high-pitched sing-song way they have. And it reminds me always of the monkeys in the jungle. And there were a few of them up there. I must say, it was my first real meeting with them. I didn't see them. It was pitch dark. But I got back on my bike and went back to headquarters and then I suddenly realised that the first time I'd met the enemy, I'd run away from them and I was very, very cross with myself and ashamed myself until I told Billy Keith, Mike, you did what you were told to do. I didn't want you having a single-hand battle with the bloody Japanese. I wanted to know where they were. But by then, they had got onto the airfield and gone right the way through the Doga defences. And there was a lot of confused fighting for 3 or 4 days. I can't remember an awful lot of it, but around the swamp land behind the beaches, in up there, you get beach and then swamps, more or less. That's generally the sort of format of it. There was an awful lot of confused fighting, and eventually we retired just south of Cotabato. And then to a place called line called Machang.
What did that consist of?
It was virtually there was a break in the jungle and paddy. Jungle and jungle and banana trees and this kind of thing, and it was a large back in Rubber where we were, and then in front of us was about 150 yards of paddy. On the right of the road, in the rubber, was I think it was the Fronty Force Rifles, and on the left of the road were the Blutches, and that is where the Blutches put in a very fine counterattack on the Japanese. Through the paddy and into the jungle, come secondary jungle, call it secondary jungle, the other side, where they actually went in with a bayonet. And that was a Pathan company. And they caused quite a lot of casualties. My great friend Pop Thistleton Dar was commanding them and got an MC. I had my first contretemps with the Japanese. Two contretemps I had on that day.
Can you tell me about them?
Yeah. Prior to the Blutches going in on the left-hand side of the road and through the paddy in the counterattack, I'd walked down to the edge of the jungle to see if anything was going on. This was early in the morning. See if there was any movement the other side. When suddenly there was a crack above my head and a branch broke. That I thought, I wonder what the hell that is. And I looked to my right. The other side of the road was a large, and the other side of the road, and about 10 yards forward of the rubber was a large pile of wood. And I saw a movement in this wood. Naive as I was, I realized I'd been fired at. Just at the same time, Billy Key, with Colonel Frith commanding the Blutches, Pop Dark, company commander, and one of the other COs was walking forward through the rubber, the other side of the road from me, and they were going to come up along, not alongside, but 15 yards away from these, where some Japanese were. So I rushed across and said, look out, there's some bloody Japanese there. I know Billy Key got his 45 out. I threw a grenade. I love grenades. And there were three Japanese underneath this wood pile. And this gave one the first indication how bloody cunning and clever these our enemy was in this type of warfare. We killed them, but had they not fired at me, he might have got the bloody brigadier.
Were they killed by your grenade?
Or no, what? I don't know who killed them. Really, I mean, the grenade went in, and there was. I know I was very nearly sick at the first mutilated body I'd seen. And then, later on after the Baluch attack, I asked Billy Key whether it would be a good idea if I took part of my intelligence section, which I had tried to train in jungle warfare. Realizing there wasn't a single pamphlet written on jungle warfare. It was all out of what I thought in my naivety again, how you would work in it, because this is how we had worked through the jungle when we were doing the maps and the tracks. And I took four fellows down to the left, because I thought that having been attacked frontally, they might be trying to get round the left flank to the Clanton River, because the Clanton River ran on our left. And we went through the jungle. And I must say they were very good. They no talking, sign language, stopping every now and again, listening, one fellow looking round the back, which the Americans never seem to do to this day. and I came across a stream which was coming in from the Clanton River. Once again, this chattering of monkeys, and there were three Japanese in their G-strings in the stream having their bath. They're very clean people, the Japanese, and they always try and have a bath at any possible time. So I lobbed a couple of grenades into them. Didn't stop to... there was no sound from them. But didn't stop to find out whether there were any more. I reckon I'd done my job. And came back. But in actual fact, they never came around that side at all. When they attacked in the next evening, they came around to the right of our positions, i.e. to where the Frontier Force Regiment were.
So those two incidents happened on the same day?
Those two happened on the same day, so that was quite a... I never really... By then, you see, the 11th Division on the other side of Malaya had suffered quite a lot of casualties. The airfield out there had been bombed, so that any airport... Within the first day, the Japanese had air superiority. I can actually say, after the first day, I never saw a British plane. our positions were rather controlled by what was happening to 11 Div on the other side. And 11 Div had suffered some heavy attacks by the Japanese, and they'd had to withdraw from their original positions. Mind you, this was in the middle of it, was monsoon, and it was raining, and it was dreadful. The clothing that the troops had was quite ridiculous. Heavy ammunition boots, which broke up in the mud and the slush and the grime within a week. Khaki drill trousers, not even trousers, shorts. In my opinion, absolutely no one had thought about this, because no one thought that we actually get off the roads. The Japs by now had brought their tanks up on the facing 11 Div. We had no anti-tank stuff at all. So their tanks just came on and on and on.
You didn't have any boys anti-tank
rifles? Oh, we had boys anti-tank rifles, but have you ever fired one?
I've heard about them.
To break your shoulder, Robinson. No, I mean, I may be overdramatic, but I mean, they were well equipped for jungle warfare, and we were not well equipped for jungle warfare. Plus, they had air superiority, which is most important, which was proved in Burma, that if you have air superiority, you've got it. Because in the end at Burma, when we had complete air superiority, we could do what we wanted. If we could leave a brigade there, isolated, supplied by air support. Quite happy. Chindits did it. Most important. Anyhow, to come back to 8th Brigade. As I said, our positioning was dictated by what was happening at 11 Div. And as 11 Div was pulling back, it was perfectly obvious that unless we did something, now they had air superiority, the whole brigade was going to be cut off in Kelantan. So Billy Key had rehearsed all this. And we pulled back eventually to Kulakrai station. We evacuated bit by bit. I can't remember how we evacuated. I do remember that I came out on the last train with Billy Key. And all the transport that we'd left up there. See, we didn't destroy anything. There was no... Oh, what did the Russians use?
Scorched earth.
Scorched earth. There should have been. All the civilian transport was left there. All our own transport was left there. There was no thought of setting fire.